and welcome to Joshua Judges Ruth. Thank you. Thank you. Joshua Judges Ruth is the podcast about the Old Testament books of Joshua, Judges, and Ruth. I'm Ken Lanning. Hello, and welcome, and thank you for listening to Joshua Judges Ruth. This is episode 9, Sin in the Camp, and today we're talking about Joshua chapter 7. Last time, when we looked at Joshua chapter 6, we saw that Joshua commanded his men to destroy everything in Jericho. It was all kerem, set aside or prescribed. They were to turn over all the metal to the Lord's treasury. Everything else was to be burned. Joshua warned the men that if they didn't destroy everything, they themselves would be destroyed. The writer of Joshua was a believer in Chekhov's philosophy that if you show a gun in chapter 6, you have to use it in chapter 7. Joshua 6 ends on a high note. The Israelites do indeed destroy Jericho, and Joshua becomes famous, but verse 1 of chapter 7 portends disaster. From the NASB, quote, "But the sons of Israel acted unfaithfully in regard to the things under the ban. For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, from the tribe of Judah, took some of the things under the ban. Therefore, the anger of the Lord burned against the sons of Israel." End quote. Apparently, no one sensed that there was anything wrong or that anything was amiss. Joshua set his sights on Ai and sent spies to scope it out. Unlike the two spies from chapter 2, they apparently made it up there and back without being detected. We'll talk lots more about Ai next time, but for now, just know that it sits about 10 miles west of Jericho, and at 2,800 feet above sea level, it's a 3,600-foot climb from Jericho to Ai. The spies recommend that Joshua send 2,000 or 3,000 soldiers, since the city is small and there's just a few men there. And the Bible tells us about 3,000 men went up to attack Ai, and they were routed. Well, they were routed by Joshua's standards. Chapter 7 says that the men of Ai killed, quote, "about 36 of them." All of my English versions of the Bible use that word "about" here in verse 5. I guess all my Bibles are in English, but it's still interesting that the writer uses "about" for such a small number. We don't know how many from Ai were killed, if any, but the men of Ai chased the Israelite contingent from the gates of Ai back down the slope. When the people heard about this, their hearts melted and became like water. Prior to this incident, we've been told a couple of times in Joshua that the Canaanites were the ones melting in fear. Here, with the loss of 36 men, the pendulum swings the other way, and now the Israelites are melting with fear. Joshua is so despondent, he tears his clothes and falls face down on the ground before the Ark of the Covenant. Defeat was apparently the last thing Joshua expected. The Bible doesn't say whether or not Joshua accompanied the Israelite contingent to Ai, but it would seem he did not make the trip, a mistake he won't repeat. Even the loss of 36 men was so shocking to Joshua that he falls on his face before the Lord and begins to question the whole enterprise. He actually starts sounding like the Israelites who didn't make it into Canaan because of their doubt and fear. He and the elders lay there on the ground with dust on their heads, and Joshua asks the Lord, "Why did you bring us across the Jordan to be destroyed by the Amorites? We should have been happy to stay on the east side of the Jordan." He then tries to convince the Lord that it is in his best interest to defend the Israelites. He says to the Lord, "Look, the Canaanites are going to hear about this. They're going to surround us and wipe us out. And how will that make you look, Lord?" At this point, the Lord had heard enough, and he says to Joshua, "Oh, don't grovel. One thing I can't stand is people groveling." Actually, from the King James we read, quote, "And the Lord said unto Joshua, Get thee up. Wherefore liest thou thus upon thy face? Israel hath sinned." That's from verses 10 and 11. The Lord goes on to tell Joshua that someone has broken his commandment and taken something that was forbidden or prescribed. He says that Israel will not be able to stand before her enemies until they destroy the perpetrator of the theft. The The people are to consecrate themselves that night and come back in the morning, and the Lord would reveal to them the one who had sinned. Verse 15 says that the one who is caught with the devoted items would be destroyed with fire because he has done a disgraceful thing in Israel. This phrase, disgraceful thing in Israel, as translated by some English versions, appears a couple of other times in the Bible leading up to the book of Joshua. Once is in Genesis chapter 34 when it's used to describe Shechem's rape of Dinah, which we talked about. The other time is in Deuteronomy 22 when it describes the behavior of a woman who is not a virgin on her wedding day. The penalty for that was stoning. The tribes present themselves to Joshua early the next morning. Through some sort of divination, the tribe of Judah is chosen, and 11 other tribes let out the collective breath they were holding. So how was the tribe of Judah chosen? Well, we don't really know. The Bible doesn't tell us. We do know that the Israelites used something called the Urim and the Thummim to make decisions. In Exodus 28, the Lord tells Moses to make a breastpiece for Aaron, the high priest. The breastpiece would have 12 stones, one for each of the 12 tribes, but also they were to put in the breastpiece, the Urim and the Thummim, quote, so that they may be over Aaron's heart whenever he enters the presence of the Lord. Thus Aaron will always bear the means of making decisions for the Israelites over his heart before the Lord, end quote. Before getting ready for this episode, I would have told you the Urim and the Thummim were two stones, but the Bible doesn't say what they are, and no one really knows today. In fact, the meaning of those two words, Urim and Thummim, is not known for certain. So we don't know what they were or how they were used, but they were used to make decisions, and so we can only assume they used the Urim and the Thummim to call out the tribe of Judah. But it didn't stop there. Judah was taken, then the Zerahite clan was taken. After that, the family of Zimri was taken. Then they came man by man, and Achan, the son of Carmi, was taken. Now, critical scholars will assert that the Deuteronomistic history of Israel, of which Joshua was a part, was written from a Judahite perspective and in defense of a Judahite monarchy. Nevertheless, here we see someone from the tribe of Judah messing up big time. Not that others from Judah don't mess up big time as well, including Judah's first king, David. And by the way, Achan is the only Israelite character in the first part of the book, that is, the part dealing with the conquest, who is named besides Joshua. Joshua then tells Achan to tell him what he has done, and he uses the phrase, "my son," to address Achan. I can almost hear the disappointment in Joshua's voice. Once Achan was called out, or once he knew he was caught, he confessed right away. He said that it was true, and he did sin against the Lord, the God of Israel. He said he saw, for one, a beautiful Shinar mantle. Shinar would be an area in Mesopotamia. Many Bibles translate Shinar as Babylonian. The mantle may have actually been a royal robe. That's how the word is translated in Jonah 3:6, when, after hearing the preaching of Jonah, the king took off his, quote, royal robe. Secondly, he saw 200 shekels of silver. We don't know for certain how much a shekel weighed at this time, but it was probably between 9.5 and 10.5 grams. So if we make it easy and say the shekel was 10 grams, then he saw 2,000 grams, or about 4.5 pounds of silver. And as of today, the day I'm writing this, that would be $1,090 worth of silver. Thirdly, he saw a wedge of gold that weighed 50 shekels. At 10 grams per shekel, that's 500 grams, a little over a pound. And at today's gold price, that's $18,225 worth of gold. Achan said he saw these things, and he coveted them, which was a violation of the 10th commandment, "Thou shalt not covet." He said the items were buried in the ground in his tent. Joshua sent some men, and they ran, or hurried, to the tent, and lo and behold, found the items just where Achan said they were. The men brought the items and spread them out before Joshua and the people, and before the Lord. Once they saw the items, Joshua and all Israel took Achan to the valley of Achor to mete out his punishment. But they didn't just take Achan. They took the robe, the silver, the gold, his sons and daughters, his cattle, his donkeys and sheep, and his tent and all his belongings. It all had to be purged. Once in the valley, Joshua asked Achan, "Why have you brought trouble on us? The Lord will bring trouble on you today." The Hebrew word for trouble, Achor, is a play on Achan's name. The Bible says that all Israel stoned Achan and, quote, all the rest. This would include the rest of his family, which is, of course, a very hard thing to imagine. Commentaries go a couple of ways here. One is the children were brought to the valley simply to witness the stoning. The second and probably more common explanation is that Achan's family shared in his guilt because they didn't report the crime. The Bible doesn't actually say that. One has to infer it. It's as if it's assumed that the fate of the family is tied to the fate of the father. So they were stoned, then burned. Then they piled a large number of rocks over top of Achan, which, quote, remains to this day. At this, the Lord turned from his anger, and they called the place Valley of Achor. There we see that word again, Achor. In other words, it was called the Valley of Trouble. This valley, as mentioned in Joshua 15:7, served as part of the boundary between the tribes of Benjamin and Judah. Since these early conquest sites are associated with the territory of Benjamin, some see a pro-northern tribe's bent to these chapters of Joshua, and the fact that Achan is from Judah helps play into that. Indeed, Joshua himself is from the tribe of Ephraim, a prominent northern tribe. But I'm getting way ahead here. We haven't even conquered the whole of Canaan or divvied up the land yet. But just know that Judah had an on-again, off-again relationship with the other tribes of Israel. I'll also point out that some see this story about Achan as an etiology for the name of the Valley of Achor in the pile of stones that may have existed there at one time. In other words, this was the legend. It's not hard to imagine a group of people purging the source of a deity's anger. Humans have been fascinated with this from the beginning of time. Thankfully, we don't practice it anymore, which makes Shirley Jackson's The Lottery so enjoyable to read. Achan wasn't the first person who died as a result of his sin. In the desert, Korah, a man who attempted to lead a rebellion against Moses and Aaron, was followed up by the earth, along with all his associates and their families. In Numbers 15, they found a man who was gathering wood on the Sabbath. After inquiring of the Lord, the directive was to stone him. It appears that only he died that day, and not his family as well. And that's the confusing part of this story, that the children were killed as well, especially since Deuteronomy 24:16 says that a child should not be put to death for his parents' sin. So with the commentators, we have to conclude that either the children didn't die, or they did participate in the sin and did die. Or, if we say all of this is a legend and pieced together into a narrative by later editors, then why did they include this part of the story in light of Deuteronomy 24:16? Except that it's hard to backspace and make corrections when you're writing on vellum. With that, I will leave you for today. I'm thankful that getting stoned has a different connotation today than it did in Joshua's day, though I'm still not sure it's healthy. But at least you're doing it to yourself. So until next time, when we look at the final defeat of Ai, be strong and courageous. Have I not commanded you?